Do you reckon we should let Ewan host then, Rafe?
Oh, well, I do believe he's back in the country and actually in the right place this time. So I think it might be a good idea.
In order to form a more perfect operating system, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common operating system, and promote the general applications and security. Oh, forget that. I'm not going native. Hello, I'm back!
Oh.
And you can hear a collective groan or collective cheer in the background, depending on your point of view.
I can hear everybody cheering! Hello! What did I miss?
You missed lots of news. It was terribly exciting while you're away. Cheap 5230s, just like your Nokia Neuron that you were burrowing in the States. Lots of software announcements and even a couple of device announcements from out in China. But I'm sure it wasn't nearly as exciting as all your various trips.
Oh, I had a very exciting time. I got to see Motorhead play. I got to see Bowling for Soup sing Don't Stop Believing and interview an astronaut, Richard Garriott.
And what had this astronaut done that was particularly remarkable?
He's an astronaut. He's been in space. He sold enough computer games that he raised $30 million and bought a ticket on a Soviet space shuttle.
I think Ewan's time in America does trump our boring time here in the UK, Rafe. I think we acknowledge that he's won this one.
Yeah, I think that's possibly a fair point. Perhaps we could maybe, you know,
What do I win? Does that mean I get to host? Can I host? Please.
Yes, you can host this week, but we need to get on topic because this is the All About Symbian Insight.
Podcast number 112, without even dropping a beat there. Yes, myself, Ewan Spence here, welcoming back. But of course, the news has carried on, as has the podcasts. It's great to be back in the chair. And joining me, Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
Steve Litchfield.
Yes, hello, and you had me at I Saw Motorhead live.
And Rex Hamilton, starring as Abraham Lincoln. Right then, what have we got news-wise? Let's start off with something kind of relevant to my trips in America, which is the application that everybody loves when they see it on one of the Symbian phones. It's just officially turned its first birthday over version 1.0, which is Gravity. So a happy birthday, Yanoli Mobile Ways, for getting Gravity to be one of the leading third-party applications for Symbian devices, and one that even makes people who use other smartphones in America absolutely jealous. And as we all type happy birthday into the handsets, we'll move on to the next bit of news, which is the WordPress client recently reviewed. I actually find this one really interesting, partly because it's the first major application I've seen that's using the Qt runtime, and it has really impressed me. And Rafe, I think you've been playing around with it as well.
Yes, I've had a quick look at this as well. I think it's worth pointing out that it goes beyond your average blogging client. You know, it's including things like the WordPress statistics in the latest version, and it's meant to be a full system for managing your WordPress blog from your phone. Obviously, it's still going to be easier to set things up on the PC, but it does provide pretty comprehensive functionality. As you said, it's written in Qt. This is the second application that's sort of mainstream. I think the first one was the Skype application, but most people aren't aware of that. But I think it's a good showcase for the potential of what Qt applications can do, particularly when they're sort of web-connected and need to be web-aware, if you like. And I know you've been playing with this as well, Ewan. What have you made of the UI? I mean, does Qt deliver on its promise of creating applications that are relatively easy to use, bearing in mind there's a long way to go on the UI side on Qt?
I think it does, simply because this looks just like the admin panel and feels like the admin panel that you would get on your full web browser. You've got your tabs at the top that allows you to see posts, pages, and comments. And those are the main things that you want to manage. Popular box, get a lot of comments into, approve, delete, spam, or reply to, and that can go on. And it's making good use of the S60 and what will be Symbian Hat 3 elements that are coming along as well. So it interfaces nicely into the system. And quite a few of the problems, because this is it's still not 0.6 and there's still some issues, and I think some of them are actually issues with Qt, which will be resolved over time, and some are issues with the coding. So they both have this moving goalposts. I wouldn't want to use this in a business critical environment. I wouldn't want to be a report writer in the field and have to use this to file a story. But I'm more than happy to have this as monitoring and as a sort of second level. If you need to get something up, then you can get it done as well. And also, I just love the fact that it's continued to be developed. I mean, I was in the middle of running the review for All About Symbian, and halfway through the review, it's like, oh, there's a new version that's come out. Oh, right, okay, let's see what's changed then. And it's been through about 20 or 30 iterations already, and I think that is good for people to see that that's how a certain way that open source can actually work.
Yeah, just to fill in the technical background there, Ewan, you're quite right. Qt is still really in the beta phase. It's effectively a technology preview on the existing versions of Symbian. It will be pre-integrated into Symbian 3, but that's clearly quite a few months off before we start seeing it in devices. And so you could say it's fair to say it's in the early test stage. And of course, the actual application itself is still very much in beta. But I do like the way they're developing it in the open. And I think this ties in also with the philosophy that both Nokia and the Symbian Foundation themselves have with regard to developing software, developing things in the open, relying on the community to provide feedback, suggestions, bug fixes, ideas, etc., etc. And that's something that WordPress themselves have championed. So it all fits together very nicely, and a good example, I think, of a community-driven project, you know, perhaps with that extra bit of backing that's provided between WordPress and Nokia to keep it moving along at a fair clip. So, you know, a good example of how sort of commercial interests can come together, but use a sort of community-driven open source philosophy to create an application that looks well on its way to being very promising indeed.
Indeed. Other applications that allow you to get in and manage your content are Facebook, famously available in 5th edition, but not really being available for all of the 3rd edition phones, only targeted at one or two of the handsets. It's actually running now on all the 3rd editions. Now, Steve, was this meant to happen or not? Because did I miss an announcement while I was away?
It absolutely was not meant to happen. And in fact, it hasn't quite happened, in that the version that is up on the Ovi Store, as I checked yesterday, was listed as Facebook for E71 and E72. Now, obviously, what's happened is that the Ovi Store is broken again. This time, it's that applications that are not actually specifically designed for your phone are being shown up in the Ovi Store, whereas they should obviously be hidden and just should just show you the apps that will work on your device. That wasn't happening. So for one glorious day or two, people like me with N95s and even the E90 and with all manner of different screens have been able to download the quote Facebook for E71 and E72, and a few minor caveats, things like, I think photo uploading wasn't quite working because of differences between the E71 and E72's cameras and the other devices' cameras. But apart from that, it's quite a glorious little utility, a Facebook client. So it works very, very well on the N95, works well on the N86. It even kind of works well on the large screen D90. So if it's still there, go grab it on the Ovi Store. If it's not, then do look at the links in the comments on our Facebook story on allaboutsymbian.com. And there are several people who have managed to extract the SIS file, so just install that instead.
Now, this must walk a fine, fine line between, you know, getting the most from your phone and respecting the rights of the programmers.
Yeah, I had no idea exactly how this Facebook application came to be there in terms of exactly who programmed it, but it's a crying, crying shame if it hasn't been released after all this time. It's, what, a year or so now since the Ovi Store launched, and it's getting on for a year since this Facebook web runtime system was launched in S65th edition, and we've had this E71 version now for many months, and I just, for the sake of a little fiddling of some photo uploading code, I cannot believe that it wasn't released. It's a free program. It's not doing anyone out of any royalties. So I honestly can't see any harm in this case.
Big changes abound for the Ovi Store as well. A lot of people regard it as a sort of black sheep of the online stores. But when you're doing, what, over a million downloads a day? You've got not just games, but content, applications, podcasts, desktop themes, a million ringtones of ring ding 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 ring ding 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 ding. But it's a success, isn't it? Let's be honest here. I mean, it's done some change. We'll talk about them in a second. But Rafe, Ovi Store works. It does what it's delivered. And should we be worried that it does it in a slightly different way to other stores?
No, I don't think so. And just to correct you there, it's actually now 1.5 million downloads a day. And that was figure was from, I think, the beginning of February. So I think we can be pretty sure that it's approaching the 2 million mark by now. I think the problem with Ovi Store it has, in the public perception at least, it's had a bit of an albatross round its neck from the launch period and from the sort of first 6 months. But I think it's really starting to deliver now. Some of the changes they made at the beginning of the year in terms of putting tabs on the UI, and now we've got a whole range of new features that we'll talk about in a minute. But it does actually work. It delivers extra applications, services, content onto users' phone in a very easy-to-use manner. It's by no means perfect, but I think it has almost unprecedented global reach in terms of, you know, you can put a piece of content in the store, and within a week it will have reached 180 countries. And you don't really see that on the other platforms. You're seeing more and more of these. We've got X 100,000 downloads on the Ovi Store. I think the latest one we've had is Furtiv this week with their media sharing plugins. They've gone over 100,000, you know, increasing fast as well. I know from some of the content I put in the store, that's also been downloaded very well as well. So I think a lot of the criticism around it is largely unfounded. Clearly, there's still room for improvements. You know, you might think about things like, you know, demo application, being able to download and buy later, or subscription billing, or in-application billing. And
or program updates.
Program updates. Equally well, those are all on the roadmap for later in the year, I understand. But the basic functionality is pretty much there, and it does work pretty well. Some people have complaints about downtime. I think that happens to all the application stores. But there's a, I would say, a very big difference, big contrast between what it was like, you know, just under a year ago and what it is like now. And it's not perfect, but it's in a very usable state, and it does deliver on the promise of being able to get extra stuff onto your device in an easy-to-use manner.
And to go along with the growing reputation of the Ovi Store, we've had some changes in the last week. Steve's been having a closer look at them, and they really are helping the usability of the store on the handset and on the PC, Steve.
Yes. Version 1.05, which was the client we've had for quite a long time now, has been replaced by 1.06. Woohoo! But there are some significant differences here in conjunction between the new client and the code that's on the servers. And what gets served up into the widget, as it were. You now get up to 5 stars for ratings. So the old system was 3 stars, which made no sense whatsoever because everything ended up with 2. So we've now got a bit of granularity, and then you can actually start to see 2 stars, 3 stars, 4 stars. Yeah, it's quite interesting to see how they've rounded up and approximated what used to be 1 or 2 stars into the 5-star system, but I'm sure that will settle out over time. You now get the reviewer's device noted. So if someone's been reviewing a utility on, for example, a 5800, and you've got an N97, and you're worried that the keyboard is going to mess things up or vice versa, then you can at least note which devices people have tried them on. And this is a big one. You have to have downloaded the app to review it before. I'm guessing from the connotations there that people could actually just post a review without actually even trying the program, which makes no sense whatsoever. So I'm glad to see that there to prevent spamming.
That's finally a good one, and I wish Amazon would do that, actually, because one of the things that's been picked, I think Paul Carr was writing about this, that so many people were reviewing his book and going, you don't have a Kindle version, and giving him 1 star. And these people never, ever bought it. So it was almost polluting the information about this stuff. So I think both of those are really smart moves.
Finally, there's also more information on the details page in the client. So before you asked for screenshots and you got some tiny little thumbnails. You now get to larger images. They are still square, I believe, which is rather annoying. But you do get more text information and more graphical information. So it's a win all round, really. There are also some changes to the desktop-based version. It's got rid of that whizzy little device animation where your device is kind of went round in a carousel, and you've now got a proper grid. You just scroll down and pick the one you want. And it's interesting also that they've shown their own categorization of the devices: classic, slide, touch, flip, full keyboard. I'm thinking, where's D90? Anyway, I digress. So there's work at the client and at the server end, and hopefully you'll all enjoy using it a lot more.
Indeed. Right then. Nokia seems to, again, been churning out stuff and updates and things going on. And again, the Beta Labs program has been churning out these little cute programs, some of which might graduate, some of which might die, some of which might get spun off completely. I remember somebody asking on one of the comments, what has actually happened to the sports tracker? Well, it got spun out into a separate company. We should be seeing from them at some point this year. Looking forward to that. But one that they've announced just recently is Nokia Bots, which just sounds like adding a creepy AI into your phone. Please tell me this isn't the case.
Well, that largely depends, Ewan, on your definition of creepy UI. What these little, I think I'd describe them as mini utilities, do is look at how you're using your phone and change some configurations based upon that. There's actually made up of 4 separate items. There's Profile Bot, which helps you by automate profile changes during meetings. So this means it looks at your calendar, and if you typically switch your profile to silent during a meeting, it will do that in the future for you automatically. The Alarm Bot, that looks at when you're setting alarms for getting yourself up in the morning, and will automatically suggest making a new alarm for you. And because all of these bots live on the home screen of the N97 and N97 Mini as sort of mini home screen widgets. It just makes it quicker to set an alarm because you just press a single thing on the home screen and it sets the alarm up for you. The shortcut bot is, I think, for my mind, the most universally applicable and the most useful, in that it looks at the applications you're using over time and then puts the four most commonly used ones on a shortcut bar. And this is really, to my mind, you know, it should be optionally at least the way that the shortcut bar works anyway, because I know I'm very bad organizing the four most commonly used icons onto my phone, partly because I switch phones on a fairly frequent basis and partly because I just sort of don't really register which applications I'm using most frequently, and so it takes me a while to go, actually I should really be putting this application on the shortcut bar, and this does it automatically for you. The last one's also potentially quite interesting. It's a battery bot, and that registers when you've got a low battery in the evening and tells you that you might want to recharge it overnight, because otherwise when you wake up in the morning, you'll have a dead battery. And I'm sure all of us have gone through that process a couple of times where you forget to plug in your phone or you don't realise what the power situation is and wake up to find a dead smartphone in the morning, which is a bit annoying. You know, minimum you want is to be able to get to the nearest plug, and if you're going off to the office, that can be a bit annoying. As I said, this is implemented as a sort of home screen widget on the N97 and N97 Mini, and thus at the moment is restricted to those devices. It's very easy to use and easy to set up. You just, you know, page through the screens. We've been seeing this sort of idea of smart intelligence in the phones based on your behaviour, based on context, for a long time in concept devices. So I'm really glad to see this sort of get into the daylight through Beta Labs, because I think this kind of idea really has a lot of potential in the future. You know, we talk about adding AI into phones, and you know that's some way off, because getting that kind of powerful intelligence into the phone probably is not realistic anytime soon. But creating applications are just a bit cleverer based on context awareness, and that's things like location triggering that we'll see coming in the next set of Symbian devices, or these ones which are monitoring your behaviour for, you know, behaviour that you carry out on a regular basis and sort of automating it for you. It gets to the point where your phone is no longer you having to tell it to do things, but your phone's going, you usually do this, so I'm going to do it for you anyway. And I do like that kind of smart intelligence. So if you want to go and try this, you can get this from betalabs.nokia.com in the usual place. You know, sign up, give them feedback. It is in beta, so, you know, the usual warnings apply. But I've had this on my N97 Mini and haven't noticed any problems. So it does appear to be reasonably stable. I don't think I've had enough meetings yet for the silent thing to start kicking in, but certainly the alarm bot has worked for me, as has the shortcut bot, and the battery bot worked for the first time the other day. So a definite thumbs up from me and well worth checking out.
Is there a dog walking bot?
There isn't a dog walking bot, sadly. Instead, I've been using the ViewRanger application, which has recently been updated to use OpenStreetMap data. And of course, that gives you global coverage as well as doing tracking. You can take a photo of your dog and have it geotagged or automatically uploaded up onto the web. So if you want a dog walking bot, I'd advise you to check out ViewRanger, and that's ViewRanger.com. For everything else, it's betalabs.nokia.com.
Given that shortcut bot, Rafe, did it change when it changed your shortcuts? Did anything surprise you that another application came up? It was like, really, I use that so much?
Yes, actually, the one that sort of surprised me a little bit was the camera application. But when I think about it, yes, because initially it was just the four applications I'd opened most recently, and over time it did change to the ones I use most commonly. So no surprise to see the web browser popping up there, I think, along with Gravity. And I had been using Skype quite a bit on the phone, so that was there. But then over time, it was actually the messaging application, not surprising, for SMS. And as I say, the camera application. But given that's something that you tend to open and then it will close itself down in the background, or you'll close it, perhaps it isn't surprising to see that there. You only need to be taking three or four photos a day and it'll start appearing, compared to something like, you know, Web or Gravity, which typically I'll leave open and running for most of the day. So that was the one that surprised me, and I'm sure everyone will get a different response. And to start with, it kind of annoyed me because I deliberately shut down the other, you know, the shortcut bar that I made. It annoyed me that they weren't staying the same. But as I said, as time went on, they actually settled down to four standard applications. And, you know, if my usage changes in the future, you know, there's a new application I find myself using a lot, it will appear there. And, you know, I think that's, you know, a really clever bit of programming. I mean, it's not terribly complicated in one sense, monitoring that kind of thing, but it does add a real sense of ease of use. And as the Beta Labs people said, it's really just about autonomously learning your personal preference, so it improves your user experience on a daily basis. And given so much emphasis is put on user experience these days in terms of when people are reviewing phones or talking about features, you know, this kind of thing, which is relatively unique as far as I'm aware, I haven't seen many other examples of this. You know, I'd like to see this sort of graduated out of Beta Labs and onto devices in relatively short order.
Indeed. So there we have Nokia Bots Beta Labs. As always, if you're using beta software, we'd recommend that you back up your phone to even just to the SD card that's sitting in the back if you have one, or onto your PC as well. So one click from the PC suite or the OV suite. One day you will thank us. For the other 1,000 days, you'll just think, why am I wasting my time? Very much recommended. Right then. Obviously, you recommend backups when you're testing out new hardware. And Steve, I understand that while I've been in America with the 5230, you've been sitting and doing your the monster review on the Sony Ericsson Vivaz. Yep.
Yes, it's very much a, I keep using this phrase over and over, a Jekyll and Hyde phones which have immense pros but then immense cons. And I always joke with Mr. Tim Salmon of the Phone Show chat. We say if ever there was a perfect device, we'd be out of a job because we just recommend it and then toddle off down the pub, which doesn't sound like a bad idea. But anyway, digressing. The Vivaz is a lovely form factor, lovely in the hand. People say they fall in love with it when they first hold it. They say, yes, I want this phone. But then the gotchas, it come at you like huge, great sledgehammers. There's no mass memory disk, so you've got a budget for a huge micro SD. Okay, well, I'll get over that. That's 30, 40 quid to get a 16 gigabyte card. There's no camera glass protection. So there's this camera-centric device with nothing to protect the camera glass at all. And it's in the most exposed place where it's going to get scratched by keys and everything under the sun. There's no flash for cameras. You'd say, try and take a photograph down the pub. There's no flash. There's no LED flash. You just get a blurry, grainy, dark thing. And if you decide to turn the video light on, everyone goes, ah, it's too bright. And they run away and you still don't get the photograph. The screen tech used, TFT, again for a camera, this is as bad as the Nokia N86, which has a similar problem with OLED. Here you've got a transmissive TFT screen that you take it out in sunlight to take that glorious spring sunny morning in the UK, and you can't see what you're shooting, so you end up framing the wrong thing and getting the wrong shot. There's the three interfaces. You've got a flashlight home screen with one interface. You've got the S60 fifth edition interface, which itself isn't brilliant, as people know. It's not perfect in any shape or form. And then you've got the Sony Ericsson Media Suite Kinetic interface. That's three completely different interfaces in the same device. And it's just, I just feel like ranting all the time. Against all of that, it has got a really good camcorder. So if you want to do continuous autofocus, a high-def video, and you don't mind playing a bit with volume later on in your video editing software, then this is the one to get and forgive all the other faults. But I have to say, I was quite glad to pack it up and get it off for general purpose, smartphone use, for someone who knows what they're doing. This just wasn't for me whatsoever. Ray, if you played with it at the event last month, does any of that ring true for you?
I didn't have long-term time with it, but I can certainly see what you're saying. I mean, I think the interesting thing about Sony Ericsson's recent Symbian devices, and you could possibly apply this more generally across their smartphone portfolio, is they're aiming, I think, at a slightly more fashion-conscious or a style-conscious audience, as is sort of relatively typical for Sony Ericsson, and perhaps not at the, you know, smartphone geeks who will be picking up something like the Nexus One or some of the Nokia devices or some of the HTC devices. You know, if you're looking for super high-end stuff, that's where to go. But I do think the design of the Vivaz is one of the best I've seen on a smartphone in a long time in terms of general appeal. You know, you pick it up, it does feel really nice in the hand. It looks very beautiful. And that sort of visual look goes a long way in the shop. And, you know, people will pick out faults with the software, but are willing to put up with quite a lot when you consider how annoying feature phone UIs can be. And, you know, although there's an obsession with the user experience and how that sort of thing works, I think that's sometimes overdone in terms of the importance. So I actually expect the Vivaz may end up doing quite well simply because it's got that, you know, headline feature of the video recording, but also just looks and feels good in the hand. But the thing that caught my attention about this was, you know, I think Sony Ericsson have done pretty well on the hardware. I'm maybe less obsessed with by the lens protection, because generally the materials on those things are pretty good now, and I tend to keep my devices in cases anyway. So I'm sort of one of those people who isn't really bothered about lens protection or lens covers on mobile devices. And I'm willing to let it go to have a slightly thinner device. But it does make me think the Vives, you know, put Symbian 3 on a device like this and you fix many of the sort of user experience or the UI gotchas, you know, things like the kinetic scrolling and the differences between the various aspects, things like, you know, the single tap paradigm will all go away. You'll also get various other little bits and pieces fixed. You know, you'll get the update to the web browser, you'll get the update to some of the other internal applications, which give a much more rounded and complete picture. So I think it promises quite a bit for the future for Sony Ericsson if they can, you know, produce some Symbian 3 devices with similar winning designs. They'll be well worth examining and looking at in a greater amount of detail. I don't know, did you get the impression that, you know, Sony Ericsson have iterated from the Satya, made significant improvements, and, you know, have the potential to go further in the future, Steve?
Yes, I did, although as I commented in the review, I still think this is a second generation design, and I think it will take the third generation, as you said, with Symbian 3 for it to really come good. But there was certainly a lot less bugs in the Vivaz. There were still a couple occasions when I had to yank the battery out, but they were few and far between. The Satya, I was just tearing my hair out day after day. I was pulling the battery out 3 or 4 times every single day, and there were various bugs I could just repeat one after the other. So this was a lot more stable. The media suite was slicker. The home screen setup is a lot more flexible and a lot slicker. And so if they just iterate on every front, if they put Symbian 3 in rather than Symbian 1, as they've got at the moment, then I agree. Then maybe on, you know, a Vivaz Pro 2 or something, I think would do very, very well indeed. And it'd be a lot better device.
Yeah, and of course, the interesting thing is with their media suite, for a lot of people, you know, much of the time they'll spend on the flashlight home screen and in the Sony Ericsson media suite or similar when, you know, using the actual device, because they're the key things like music and media playback. And so they won't necessarily notice their 65th edition so much. It is a bit of an ugly compromise at the moment, but I think things will improve a lot when you get to Symbian 3, which actually has many of the sort of features that make the difference and stand out, you know, as I say, the kinetic scrolling and the smoothness and the speed, etc., etc. Yeah.
Well, it's the direct manipulation paradigm, absolutely, isn't it? Whereby there's no concept of an options menu. Everything you can do is somewhere on the screen.
So I guess it's a roll on Symbian 3 and following on from that, of course, Symbian 4. And now the other person who's been using a new device for the first time is Ewan, when you've been out in the States, and he's kindly reported back on the site on some of his experience. But Ewan, I'm also curious to hear about what was some of the feedback you got when you're out there, when you pulled out this device, you know, given the cost and everything else involved, which I'm sure you're explaining to some people, what was people's reaction to the Nokia 5230, or the Neuron as it's known in the States?
Let's take that twofold. First, on the handset, I'll touch on the sort of cost issues, which is sort of the main point of the challenge. After that, to be honest, most people just thought this was a good quality smartphone. They weren't aware that it was the price had been really pulled down by Nokia, so between like $80 to $150 on T-Mobile, depending on how you buy this device. It's touchscreen, which means it's the way du jour. It has all the icons on it. I mean, it's loaded up with Opera Mini and Gravity, which are doing the lion's share of my online work while I was out in the States and around the conferences, the Game Developer Conference and South by Southwest. And generally, it was accepted. It was like, that's a good phone. That's nice. Oh, you can get Twitter and Foursquare on it. Oh, does it do Gowalla? No, well, nothing does Gowalla except the iPhone. Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, it doesn't matter. That's a good phone. And I wrote about this in the article, which I think you guys hummed and hard over putting up, which is there was less stigma attached to not having an iPhone, certainly in geek circles this year compared to last year, where, you know, now people are used to having the Droid and Verizon, the Motorola, the Nexus ones. The iPhones are still out there. BlackBerry and Research Motion have got a couple of high-end models as well. And there were a couple more Nokias kicking around. And Nokia did a very good social media attack. They targeted their money and their their events at South by Southwest to get the N97 Mini into the hands of some of the key influencers, and were showing off the phone, but not in a big, loud, brash American way, still in that sort of Finnish way. But I think Nokia, it's clear that the stigma of a Nokia is still there, but it is not as much as last year. I think that if Nokia are sensible and smart in their marketing, certainly they can use the Neuron in this low-cost base entry into the smartphone market and build up. I think that's actually a valid approach for them now. Rather than try and go in with an N97 all-singing device in at the top level and try and, you know, fight directly with Google and Apple, I think it needs to just, you know, go in at the bottom and work up the way. Forget about the generation that's doing the main blogs now. Go for the 14, 15, and 16-year-olds as they come out of school looking for a touch-based smartphone on a limited budget, and let Nokia grow up with them.
Okay, that's really interesting, Ewan. And you mentioned you're going to talk about the cost. And was there a sort of different reaction when you told people, you
know, there was,
what the cost implication of the challenge was?
Actually, the reaction was pretty much universal, which is, oh, you're having a laugh. You can't do that. They didn't sound like companies in a Disney film. $250 to buy the phone, to buy the SIM cards, to buy the minutes, the texts, the data usage, third-party applications, and peripherals. People basically went, you cannot do that. Most American tech users with a smartphone have a monthly bill of $120-$130. They have to take a $70 or $80 call plan on top of that. They then have to add their internet minutes onto that as well. So I found it, sourcing it was very hard. Only one network does pay-as-you-go data, so you have to use AT&T. There's no competition at all. Lots of people in the comments were suggesting, oh, go for this plan on T-Mobile, go for this with Verizon, but there's issues with that. Verizon don't use SIM cards because they're a CDMA network. T-Mobile needs you to sign up to a contract, and part of the deal here was that we weren't going to have a contract at the end of it. So it was walk into the AT&T store and go, I want a SIM card. Okay, we'll give you one. Do you need my name and address or anything? No, we'll just use the address of the store. Are you going to pay with a credit card or cash? Well, cash, obviously, because I'm on the run from the government or something. So there's cash. Well, there we go. So they took my name, but there was no check on that. I could have given them any name. All they would have been able to trace is a SIM card. But they could have listened into the call and got my name from that anyway. What was really interesting, though, was the attendant at the AT&T store went, so what phone are you going to use this in? So I said, well, I'll put this phone down. And he just looks at it and he's just like, huh? Well, it's a Nokia. Oh, is it a smartphone? Because this SIM card doesn't work on a smartphone. And I'm like, huh? It's okay. Well, will this SIM card work in it? Does it give me HTTP data? Not if it's a smartphone. Oh, it's okay. It's got Opera on it. Opera doesn't run on smartphones.
I think Opera's the correct term here is phone. I think the correct term here is facepalm.
I think palm is counted as a smartphone if, like, the three people in America who bought it actually went to get another SIM card. And it's like, well, we can sell you the SIM card and we can activate it, but if it doesn't work, we won't refund your money. Which seemed a bit awkward for me, but I thought, you know, well, worst case, at least I'll be able to call people and text into things like Twitter. So bought it anyway, and it worked fine. So the in-store knowledge, as high as the in-store knowledge in the UK, no changes there. So what do we end up with? $40 onto that. $15 for calls, a $5 text package, which gave me 200 texts. Otherwise, it would have been 25 cents a text. $20 bought me 100 megabytes of data. Now, that's both up and down. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to be careful with that. But in actual fact, I was really surprised by the amount of data that I used. It was very low. After the 2 weeks, and using it pretty heavily for web browsing, Twitter, Foursquare, Facebook, and things like TwitPic, I'd only used 43 meg, both up and down. So that $20 would easily have seen me through a month's worth of data, and I've still got the allowance on there for the next time I head over to America. So all in all this myth of it being really expensive to run a smartphone in the US, sorry, doesn't exist. Pick up a really basic SIM card, chuck it in an unlocked phone if you're visiting from Europe, or if you're out there in the States, buy yourself the S60s that are going to be coming out in pay-as-you-go, I expect, over the next year. The 5230, okay, it doesn't have Wi-Fi, and it's a 2-megapixel camera, but you know what? I didn't notice the fact that Wi-Fi wasn't there because I could use 3G. And, you know, you can hand me a camera and I can make all my pictures look exactly the same. So there we go. A wide-ranging look over all the Symbian world, from the 5230 setting up a beachhead in America to the Viva slowly working its way up the cliff face of sales through software, passing on intelligence, buying new applications and content from the store, updating your blogs, and all of that tied together by one tiny application coming out of the center of Germany. Robert Symbian Podcast is your audio view on the world of Symbian, hopefully coming here every week with a rotating plethora of guests and hosts, which might be a little bit more consistent over the next couple of weeks. All that remains for me, as always, to say thank you for putting up for me to Rafe Blanford.
Thanks, everybody.
And Steve Litchfield.
You're welcome.
I'm Ewan Spence, and honestly, I still don't have a touch of jet lag, but I do need a little bit more coffee, maybe perhaps a little bit of decaf coffee before we record the next podcast. But for now, thank you all very much for listening. Your comments are welcome at www.allaboutsymbian.com, and please send your chocolate flavored coffee beans to at Ewan on Twitter, or at Steve Litchfield, or at Rafe Blanford. Site itself at AAS is there as well. We look forward to all your comments, but for now, thank you for listening, and we shall catch you in the next podcast. Ta-ra.